This is a special episode of the Immunology Podcast, Immunology 2024, Day 4. Hey everyone, this is Dr. Jason Goldsmith and Dr. Brenda Rout. Welcome back to the Immunology Podcast, where we have conversations with immunologists. Today we're back with our fourth episode for Immunology 2024. Thank you to everyone who visited our booth and joined us to record. Our On the Ground episode featuring conversations with delegates will air on May 28th. As always, we'll be discussing our favorite sessions throughout the past 24 hours of the meeting, so if you weren't able to attend, we've got you covered. We're going to kick off things in just a minute, but before we get to that...
Looking for in-depth information on cell separation? Download the Cell Separation eBook from Stem Cell Technologies and streamline your immunology research. It is a practical guide on everything you need to know about cell isolation techniques and includes a collection of protocols. Visit stemcell.com/cell-separation to explore the guide and download the free ebook.
All right, Brenda. Well, I went to a industry thing this morning for my end, but I know you had some good conferences up. So what did you get to see?
Oh yeah, what a day. Well, so in the morning I went to the symposium of the SITC, so the Society for the Immunotherapy of Cancer, which was chaired by a former guest in the show, Kristen Anderson. Very, very nice. The session started with a talk from Brian Gassman from this company called Iovance. And they are really looking into TIL therapy, so tumor-infiltrating lymphocyte therapy for various tumors. And he shared with us the results from their phase two clinical trial that they run and spoke a bit about the future and what where is TIL therapy coming to. So regarding this phase two trial, which was fairly successful, but basically, you know, TIL therapy, you take the tumor of a patient, in this case was all metastatic melanoma, heavily pretreated in some cases, or everybody had like previous treatment options. And so you get the worst kind of cases. For this therapy, you take the tumors, you prepare the, you expand the TILs in vitro in large culture vessels, and then you infuse like billions of T cells after a couple of weeks of expansion. You also treat patients with IL-2 infusions, and so you can have either a big infusion or those are tested like smaller infusions. But basically what they show is surprisingly good results, given that these patients have kind of gone through so many lines of treatment and failed them all. So they have like an overall response rate of 31%. So this got them initial approval by the FDA. This was accelerated approval, I think it's called. And they need to kind of continue working with the FDA. And they're starting a phase three trial to kind of continue working on their dossier. But I think TIL therapy is very interesting how to see how this being brought more kind of in a commercial. It was always a more academic endeavor. Talking about the future, and I think this is something that it's spoken about in the field in general. So they're also doing adding, if they add a pembrolizumab, which is PD-L1 or PD-1 inhibitor, that you can improve the efficacy of the therapy. They're also making a phase three, because you still need like a phase three efficacy trial. So they're comparing with pembrolizumab as kind of more standard of care. But I think it's also very interesting. They're trying to move into other indications, different tumors, because most of these things are done in melanoma, which is, I think is a very minimal for these kind of immunotherapies. So they're trying for non-small cell lung cancer. And they've treated some patients with this TIL therapy. And the preliminary results are good, but not as good as melanoma. So I think that we still need to kind of find, there's some thought that needs to be put on maybe how the TILs are made, whether these all the patients from lung cancer are amenable to TIL therapy. So I think such an interesting field and always changing. And then next up was Daniel Powell from University of Pennsylvania. He's a well-known name in the field. His talk was about vaccine-primed T cells for adoptive immunotherapy. I thought it was a very interesting, very intriguing premise. So he started talking about vaccination and did a bit of a historical talk of using vaccination. If you vaccinate with a peptide, if you can, for example, of a tumor-associated antigen, you are using GP100 as an example. Early studies suggested this doesn't work, it's not enough. You see the cells are getting activated, but it's not enough. He also tried what happens if instead of just, you know, vaccinating with one epitope, you vaccinate with lysate, you load tumor lysate on dendritic cells and you vaccinate patients with that. You can see they mobilize tumor, anti-tumor T cells, but they're still not enough for real therapeutic potential. So what they did, and he showed some results, is for a trial in ovarian cancer in which they primed the patients with this vaccination, which they load lysate on the dendritic and monocyte-derived dendritic cells from the autologous, from the patient. They kind of treat the patient with that a little bit, and then they do an apheresis, they collect the T cells, and then they expand those T cells, and then they reinfuse, and then they give more rounds of vaccination. They see that some of the patients have kind of elicited new antigen responses that weren't there before. So that seems to relate with better responses. I wouldn't say this trial was completely successful, but I think it still gives a kind of an insight of how can we get those T cells to expand, or how can we find those T cells that are recognizing a more broad repertoire of antigens. And of course, he mentioned future approaches using mRNA vaccination with individualized new antigens. That's also something a lot of people are doing in the field. Probably we'll hear a lot about that. And then also we had, Kirstine Anderson, who was a guest in the show, she gave a really good talk about the development of TCR gene therapy. So it was mostly about the history, and she gave a really good overview of it. I really liked it. And similarly, it was Christian Capitini from University of Wisconsin, who gave a similar talk about CAR T cells and how to move from hematological cancer to solid tumors. So those talks were more, a little bit more, I would say, informative, but it was always really nice to see, you know, what's the status of the field of cell therapy and such. Really interesting.
Very cool.
Yeah. Right.
Well, yeah. I know we both went to the next thing, which was the presidential symposium.
Yeah.
This was a 2-hour session. So we'll be here for the next hour as I condense it all down. No, we're going to try to do this. No way to do it all justice, but here we go. So first up was Susan Keck from the Salk Institute talking about fueling T cell fate decisions during infections. And it was really about tumors, though. Looking at, immunometabolism to start with and tumors. And they found that, question is, we know nutrient availability affects T cells. So do you think there's altered nutrient availability for T cell that affects T cell function in tumors? And they squeezed some tumor juice out and found lots of oxidized lipids. And then they found these lipids can kill immune cells once they're in the exhausted state. And so they said, okay, that's cool. What about things other than just oxidative lipids? And one category of lipids is bile acids, which are metabolized from cholesterol in the liver. And they found that bile acids, the more of those you had, the less CD8 positive T infiltrating lymphocytes you had in hepatocellular cancer. Mm-hmm. So in liver cancer. And then they looked at this in some detail, of which of course you had to go fast because it's a 30-minute talk. And they found that primary bile acids, which are from the liver, are primarily suppress vector and function, whereas secondary bile acids, which generate the microbiome, improve T cell response. And they showed that this was, that these effects held true in murine and human hepatocarcinoma, that these lymphocytes take up bile acids in liver cancer, which then induces their death through reactive oxygen species, ER stress, and eventually they die.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that like high level story. Then we had Alexander Chinovsky from the University of Chicago looking at external and internal insults affecting autoimmunity. Two stories here related to type 1 diabetes. One was about diet, and others about sex hormones. I don't even know how many decades of work we went through here, but a lot. So one question was, does dietary modification alter type 1 diabetes incidence? They showed hydrolyzed casein or intact casein protects and slows down, but chow diet protein and egg diet protein don't. So holding protein levels the same, but changing the source. And this was microbiome independent using germ-free studies, but found it reduces secretion of insulin and other antigens from secretory granules. So there's less antigen present to generate autoimmunity. Egg white did not reverse the effect, but gluten did.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that this was microbiome dependent. They also found that TLR4 knockout mice don't develop diabetes in the system with gluten. And they found that there's LPS present in gluten that's stimulating TLR4 to drive the immune response. And this LPS is present in commercial gluten containing grocery store products.
Nice. But then they weren't really clear about why does this gluten need to be digested by this bacteria?
Right. Yeah, that was the unknown part. Like, they don't know why LPSs need this proteolysis of gluten to work, because other models show that LPS is protective. Then they looked at some sex basis autoimmunity. And it sounds like in this case, men aren't worst off.
Yeah.
Right. Men have less autoimmunity, right? Because it's androgen receptor.
Yes.
Usually men are worse off with a lot of, they get man flu.
Yeah, but not for autoimmunity.
Right. Exactly. So that being said, they found that if you remove the antigen receptor, it enhances T cell autoreactivity. And there's one mechanism through Wnt and TCF7, which is transcription factor. But another one they really dived into is PTPN22, which is a protease we talked about the other day. And they found a non-classical antigen receptor expression motif in its promoter region. And they showed that if you made a reverse motif, you flipped it. That was cool. And the human collation is this mutation is inversely correlated with autoimmune disorders through a 23andMe collaboration. And they actually, this mutation's known otherwise, or this gene has GWAS associations with type 1 diabetes. It's a very strong one, but no one was really linking it to what was going on here. It's an androgen story. The next up is Mark Jenkins from the University of Minnesota and how antigen-specific CD4 memory T cells form during infections. He basically wanted to show something that took a while to show.
Yeah.
So we know that there's these short-lived effectors and long-lived memory effectors split for CD8 cells. So you have these short-term effectors and then they all die and there's some memory ones left over and they keep going. And that's true for CD8, but not CD4. And he's trying to figure out what's happening here. And so long story short, memory T cells for CD4s are survivors after a contraction phase. And he basically mapped out the contraction phase. Mm-hmm. And what he did this is using peptide MHC2 tetramers for a listeria, mm-hmm. and then did a bunch of flow and a UMAP and single cell RNA-seq to show that you have this expression profile by day 7 post-infection that then by day 21 contracts and that this bifurcated UMAP blob, as he would put it, like two blobs of early in memory, all the stuff on the left blob, okay, the stuff that doesn't survive dies and you're only left with the memory population and then persists 90 days later.
Right, but the heterogeneity is already established already by day 7.
Yeah, so you have your two groups early on and they expand and then they start dying and only the one that has been pre-selected to survive survives by the end, mm-hmm. at day 21. And then last on the program, but last in the talk, was Diane Mathis from Harvard Medical School, T-reg control tissue homeostasis. So in this talk on T-regs from Diane Mathis, as opposed to other talks or when she was on with us, we're talking about dura mater, brain, meningeal T-regs. And so they appear early and increase with age. They divide more in young mice, but they were found to be heterogeneous with a quiescent, a TFR-like, and a not really TH1-like, but everyone else calls the same profile TH1-like, so she called it TH1-like because mm-hmm. they suppress TH1s and regulate them and have some other markers. What they found is that they rein in meningeal inflammation, especially interferon production. So if you do a diphtheria toxin ablation, you see systemic responses, but she wanted to do something more local. So she did intracistern, so interbrain, essentially, anti-CD5, which depletes activated ones, and showed this caused a local effect with interferon gamma increase. And it does lots of things. One thing she showed at the end that was really cool was that it makes your memory go away by basically causing a bunch of inflammation in your hippocampal glia cells. And so then your memory goes boop, boop.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting because he had a similar, some time ago, they talked about this story of recovery of muscle after exercise. And it's basically a very similar thing that T-Rex protect muscle cells from the interferon gamma production that happens after exercise, and that's how they maintain the health of these cells and, you know, help you improve your muscles with time, with exercise.
And clearly without it, you won't remember either.
Exactly. So again, they're doing something similar with the brain. T-Rex are always behind everything.
They get the job done.
Whew, what a day, right? Time goes flying. We're going to the gala today.
And tomorrow's the end.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just some morning sessions and then waiting for the afternoon flight.
So this brings us to the end of our latest Immunology 2024 episode. Don't forget to follow us on X at Immunopodcast to find out what we're up to at the meeting. And you can check back here tomorrow for our final edition of this series. See you then.